three, four, and five. And, oh my God, I totally forgot your name. Dennis! From Freehold.
Hi, everybody. My name is Dennis Robbins, and I'm an alcoholic. And don't worry, it's all right to forget my name. There's times I wish my wife had forgotten it, too. Because she called me all kind of names, and a lot of them weren't Dennis. Now, again, I want to thank the group for having me out here. And I just get a pleasure out of sharing my experience, strength, and hope. I think what it does, it helps me to remember what it was like for me, you know, and if I can help anybody through the steps, I'm going to try to do that. My home group is Commuter Special Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and like I said, I believe that's the best group in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a service group. My sobriety date is September 27, 1984, and through the grace of a loving God, and I can only say it that way, that I'm here by grace. I'm here through the advent of prayer, and I'm here because a power greater than me that I choose to call God today had mercy to lift me out of that hell that I was in, self-induced hell. Last week, we talked about step one, and we talked about being powerless. And what I found out, in a doctor's opinion, I found out about my disease. I had a manifestation of an allergy, a physical compulsion, and a mental obsession. How I knew I was powerless, identified in Bill's story, the solution, more on alcoholism, and we agnostics. And I understood, you know, with a great sponsor who stepped me through and showed me why I was powerless. What I did was I lacked power. What I never knew is that I couldn't stop myself until that Sunday morning when I came to and I just didn't want it anymore. And I'll be forever grateful to that. But it was, what was left with me at that moment was a lot of pain. And in step two, We came to believe that power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity, and I guess that's kind of a step of open-mindedness. And, through we agnostics, my whole opinion about a higher power, about God, changed. I was told to like get rid of all my old ideas about it, and what I had to do was form a new idea. My sponsor said, form a new idea about God, and I did, because for whatever that power was, to lift me out of the hell that I was in, to literally take away the obsession to drink, and for all the things that I had done up until that point, this God had to love me. So I created a loving God. Had to love me, you know. And so I came to believe, you know, that a power greater than myself, the power greater than us could restore us to sanity. And, you know, those are two steps that are just acceptance steps. And those are things that I just accepted. Those are just tenets that I just accepted. You know, that I was a drunk, I couldn't take up the first drink, and that I came to believe because of that event that happened to me. And I really believe that I thoroughly had step two, when I can distinguish the lie that goes off in my brain. When, yeah, the first drink is okay. And that's a lie. That's a lie. If it's not, if I don't feel like going to a meeting today, that's a lie. You know, because I remember my sponsor told me, he says, if you drink every day, you go to meetings every day. And I've done that. I just followed everything that man said, because I wanted to be so much like him. Because I believe he not only lived these, he incorporated these steps in his life. And I wanted to be just like him. And what he did, in effect, was guided me through to him. So we get to the third step. Right after chapter 5, it says, we are convinced, at this point we are at step 3. Convinced of the past two tenets that I've come to accept. And in the old writing of the steps, Bill would say, if you haven't got it to this point, throw the book away. Well, at that point, I did, because my sponsor helped me out a lot. You know, all my life, I looked outside myself for God. You know, I thought he was up in the high sky. You know, I had this picture of him with a, you know, halo and, you know, and lightning and flashes and all that. And what I found out, that he was right inside of me. But what it was is that there was so much garbage piled up in me over the years that God could never come through. You know, so when it talks in that step about self-will, I know that very well. I've been totally absorbed with me all my life. You know, I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it from the time I first began to think. You know, I always did what I wanted to do when I wanted, and if it didn't happen my way, right away I lashed out. Because what I learned in the 12 and 12 about the basic instincts. The basic instincts that make up self. You know, my sponsor said, you know, there are a lot of things, you know, in you that you need to see. So he sent me to the 12 and 12. And what it does is it describes the social instinct, my ability to get along with people. The security instinct, money, jobs, the things that I would feel secure with, and the sex instinct, you know, and that's always been a funny thing with me, you know. So, you know, basically, you know, it says in our literature that self-will ran riot, and that's what it did in my life. I didn't care about anybody when I was drinking. Food was being left on it, not in the house. The rent was not getting paid. Lights were getting turned out. All I was concerned about was what I could get. And what I found out too, that my reaction to people was always based on self, you know, and how, you know, it would seem as though whenever you did something to me, I would react negatively. I can never react positively. I always reacted negatively because I thought negatively. And one of the things that my sponsor told me, you know, you act out what you think. You know, and one of the things that I found out is that if my thinking has been disturbed all these years, then my actions have been disturbed. You know, but the strange thing is that I never knew that. I never knew that when I was drinking. I thought it was normal. I didn't know it was abnormal until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because without the drink, I found out that not only was I suffering through a lot of pain, and I used to ask my sponsor, how do I get out of this pain? He says, you got to turn your will and your life over to care of God, as you understood him. I have to make that decision. And that decision really is based on the following steps. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You know, and you know, when it talks about the actor wanting to be in control and all that, man, I identify with that. I wanted everything just the way I wanted it. And if it wasn't, I reacted negatively. You know, why? And it all stems from that little boy wanting what he wanted when he wanted it. And if I didn't get it the way I wanted, I lashed out at people. And when you lash out at people, you hurt people. Another thing I found out too, you know, when if you don't like somebody, they generally don't like you too. Most times. You know, it's the vibes you emit, you know, and the arrogance, the behavior, the way you talk to them. You know, you might think they don't like you, but if you don't like them, they damn sure don't like you either. It's just the way you present yourself. So in the third step, I made that decision to follow through in the action part of the program. And, you know, I really love that prayer. God, I give myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self. And you know, the whole thing is, I've always been stuck on me. That's the reason why I can never see things clearly. I can only see them the way I wanted to see them. I can never see it the right way or the way it should be seen. I always had my own perception of things. And you know, after that prayer, It says you can take that prayer with your wife or some spiritual advisor. Well, I took that prayer by myself on my knees. You know, to build with me and do with me is thy will. Relieve me of the bonds of self that I might better do thy will. I can't do God's will. Self-will and God's will don't match. I have to align myself with God's will. Otherwise, I'm in delusional thinking all the time because I'm thinking about me. And me is sick. You know, and you know, the last part of that prayer is make it so that I can be of some help or that I could through problems, demonstrate through the problems that occur in my life that I can get through so that others may see. You know, that I can't relieve myself of self. I have to ask God to do it. Self can't remove self, but God can remove self if I find self, if I find that thing in me that's wrong. Next it says we launch on a vigorous house cleaning. Step 4, we made a fearless and searching moral inventory. And what that is a fact-finding, fact-facing truth about me. That's all it is. You know, I hear a lot of people, oh, I'm scared of step 4. You know, I don't know. I guess for me, I have to say, and I appreciate it so much, that when God lifted the accession, he did something else with me. He took some kind of fight out of me. Because all my life, I fought everything. But for some reason or another, I never fought the program. You know, I wanted to be so much like my sponsor. When he said, all right, let's start right on step 4, there was just no hesitation on my part. None. You know, if this is going to make me better, you know, if this is going to do, then I just want to get well. See, because I'm sick. I haven't had a drink now, but I'm still crazy, you see. So I want to get better. And, you know, what he did was he told me, get a pen and paper and make 3 columns. And the illustration's right in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not going to really go through the whole illustration part, but I want to discuss some parts of that. You know, there's somewhere in there where it says, too, it says, if I take care of the spiritual, the mental and physical will take care of itself. And he pointed that out to me. If I take care of the spiritual, the mental and physical will take care of itself. And, you know, and one of the first things that they ask you to write down is resentments. And what I found out in the big book, the resentments are our number one offender. You know, they manifest from all kind of disease. I mean, from it stems all kind of delusional self-centeredness. Everything stems from resentments. And, you know, one of the things I'm going to share part of my 4-step with you. You know, I had a very, very, very deep resentment against my stepfather. Very, very deep. I was about 9 years old. And I came home from school. My mother was at work. And he had made dinner. And my sister and I were sitting, my sister was sitting on this side and I was sitting here. And I can't remember what it was, but it didn't taste good. You know, so I didn't say anything, you know, but my sister kind of made a smudge mark, you know, on the face, like, ooh, you know, like, this is bad. You know, so I looked at her, and I did the same thing. Well, next thing I know, I got shot right up beside the head. I saw stars. And I remember getting up and saying to him, boy, when I get old enough, boy, I'm going to get you. You know, and I was so angry I couldn't even see straight. And, over the years, you know, even before I even got into alcoholism, and even when I got into drinking, I had a love-hate relationship with him. Because I never talked that to nobody, so what I did was I buried it deep down inside in my subconscious. And every so often, it would jump out, you know, and it would be a violent reaction, especially with him. And if I was at my mother's house, I would get as I got older, of course, there was no more beatings. You know, I mean, there was just no more of that. And I hate to say this today, but we had a physical confrontation when I was about 19 years old. And today I regret that. I regret that. But I remember coming back from San Francisco, and I stopped in St. Louis, and he was out there at some Air Force base. He was working for the government. My mother was there. And then when I was leaving, he said something to me, and I don't know where it came from, the anger. And my mother said, "Whatever that is in you is very, very deep, and you better take care of it one day." And I told her, I can't be around him. And then there were times when I would kind of forgive myself and forgive, and I would go back around him, but I would get the rumblings. The rumblings were there. So there was a great, great thing. So when it came time to put down resentments, boy, he was number one. Number one on the list. And you know, when he tells us to do that list in three parts, I put his name right up there. And what was the cause? And the cause was what had happened at that dinner table. And in the third column, it says, what part of me was affected by it? Was my security affected by it? Yeah, I felt threatened to some degree. My social, I didn't get along with him that well. My sex, no, he never affected my sex life. And then the last column, it talks about the underlying thing. What was my part in it? And for many, 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 many years, I only saw what I wanted to see. See, I forgot the smirk. You see? I forgot the smirk. You know, not only did I forget the smirk, but I forgot that he did the best that he could do at the time that he did it. And, you know, for many, many years, when I was able to do that step, when I was able to do that in the fourth step, that part of course, I listed my ex-wife, I listed Social Security, I'm not Social Security, but IRS, my employees, I mean, I had a long list. But I'm just going to just talk about that, and I found out that what I had seen is my perception of him was wrong. All these years. You know, maybe that was the way his father reacted to him when he did something wrong. I mean, he didn't kill me, you know, but I wanted it to be the way I wanted it to be for 40 years. I didn't want to see it any other way. But you know, when you come to this program, when you get to the truth of your being, you can't help but see it if it's laid out. If you follow the way it is suggested in that big book, you see the way it really is. You know, so when it came time for the A-step list, he was right on there because I had harmed him. Over the years, I had harmed him. My arrogance. No, I'm not doing it. You know, I said some choice words to him too. I'm not going to say from the podium. That weren't really too nice, you know. And of course, that confrontation I had with him when I was 19 years old that I totally regret today because I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, when I was drinking, that was fine because I still had delusional thinking. I still thought the way I wanted to think. I was the victim. And in fact, I really wasn't. I started that whole thing. My sister really started it. I'm still an alcoholic. I still know how to blame others. But the whole thing is, I didn't have to do what she did. And I wasn't doing it because she was doing it. No, the food didn't taste good. But I didn't have to react that way. You know, and so I found that through the fourth step, you know, that resentment itself could somewhat alleviate itself. And it also tells us, and we got to put these things down on paper, because I need to look at them. My fears. I had to make a list of my fears. And I'm going to share something with you I never shared before. I was born, and I was going to be the star in my family. The star. My mother was very bright. My father was bright. They sent me to the best schools, dressed me the best. And I was in special classes for gifted people early, but then something happened. I couldn't concentrate anymore. And my grades began to drop. Now, in analytical subjects like math and geography, things, I was very good. But when it came to reading and comprehension, my mind would wander. My mind would just wander off. I could be reading a book and boom, I'm thinking about something last year or yesterday, or I mean, I can remember teachers in the classroom used to call on me and I'd say, "Oh my God, I don't know what she's talking about." Because I would be lost, you know. And a lot of times as a little boy, my mother and my godmother used to shout at me, you know, because I'd be standing there talking to them and I'm not even there. You know, they're talking to me and I'm hearing them, but I'm not really hearing them. And then they would shout and then it would get my attention. And then I would try to pick up on what they were talking about. So I had a tendency for my mind to drift. So I had fear of expectations. You know, I couldn't own up to the expectations that they had set for me. I was going to be top engineer, scientist, a lawyer, or they maneuvered me right to the top. And I always felt like I couldn't own up to that. And I had that real great fear about that, you know. When I went to school, I really struggled. And when I went to college, I really struggled. I got through, but I struggled because of that concentration problem. I don't know where it came from. I just all of a sudden came out of nowhere. Maybe I was just born with it. I just never knew it. So I had a fear of not living up to expectations. And I had to list that and the cause. And what part of me did it affect? What part of myself did it affect? And it affected my security, my social, and my sex. You know, I even had the same problem even on the job. I always felt I didn't measure up enough. Although I was falling uphill, getting good jobs, managers, and I would always give it to you. You know, if you were on my team, you got it. I'm an empowering manager. Now, I'm an empowering manager because I really don't know. So I want you to do it. Now, had I really known, I probably would have been a micromanager. But because I didn't, so I kind of like faked my way through 38 and a half years at the phone company. And I did a damn good job. Because I'm retired now, getting a tremendous pension. But that's the way it was. I also had this thing about if I didn't know, I didn't want to know. I don't know if anybody identifies that. You know, if I didn't know, I didn't really want to know. You know, I don't want to learn that because you know it, so why should I know it? You can hear the arrogance in my voice. But that's what, that self. These are fears I had, and what I found out through that was that those were all self-induced fears. That's all they were. I made myself believe that I couldn't do these things. And yet and still, I managed to do them to some degree. To some degree. You know, and so that's one of my fears. My other fear was, now I'm an ex-paratrooper. You know, I used to jump out of airplanes. But yet, I had a fear of going over bridges. I don't quite get that. I don't understand it. You know, now, I was always told to work your way through fear. So even though I would start on the bridge and get the tingling feeling, I just press the gas even more and just keep right on going, you know. And even though it comes occasionally, I'm able to handle it today. But that's just something that's within me, you know. And now, I had to write that down. You know, I have to write down all those things, those fears, that these little subtle fears that you know, sometimes dark. Sometimes I go down them steps in the dark and I get a little feeling, you know what I mean? You know, I mean, I've never admitted these things to anybody before, and except my sponsor, you know, and these are things that, you know, that I had to write down, and I had to take a look at that and find out what was the cause of that. What were the chief triggers of me that caused me to behave the way it did, the way to behave the way I did. And when I went to my sexual behavior, made a list of those sexual things, I found that through an event that happened when I was about 9 years old, an older girl at my godmother's house had introduced me to her private parts. And today they would call that sexual abuse in reverse. Well, I didn't take it as that. What it did at that age, it perverted my mind. You know, so therefore, my outlook towards women when I was drinking was one of pervertedness, and to some degree. I would take advantage. I would lie. I would get what I wanted, because then my basic nature would kick in. I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. I caused a lot of harm. So I had to make a list of the people of harm that I've done through the resentments, through the sexual behavior. And later on in step 8, I would have to list them on the amends list of those in which I could do it in a nice step. If I couldn't do it in a nice step, then I would just change my behavior towards that act. Because one of the things it tells us in that step is we don't hurt anybody. We don't cause anybody any pain. So I put these things down on paper resolutely, and I just was just writing. You know, I had no problem. I wanted to get well. You know, and I reviewed them, and I felt better about myself for doing it. Felt a lot better about myself. And I called Sonny up, and I told him, I said, you know, I got this list. And he said, well, just come and talk to me about it. We'll make an arrangement, and we'll sit and talk. Now, one thing I failed to say, and I think this is important for me, before I actually did a fifth step with my sponsor, I remember when we used to go to not treatment centers, to institutions, to correctional facilities. We were doing the Edgecombe Men facility in New York, which is a work release prison for prisoners, coming from upstate New York, from Dannemora, Sing Sing, Green Haven, and all the other ones, and they would be like a work release. So my sponsor carried an AA meeting in there every Thursday. And I would go with him every Thursday, and I would just sit with him, and I would try to watch what he did. And he just wanted me to get into service to kind of take my mind away from my own insanity. And I remember when we used to go back, he lived in the Bronx, and I used to drive back across the bridge, and we used to park the car, and he would sit there, and he would say, tell me a story. Everything. Now, I had a tremendous amount of trust in that man because he had shared his life with me. He was a drunken cop. He committed a crime in 6 years in Dannemora. His life was an open book. And he told me, he says, you know, the thing that will kill you is those secrets that you carry around. And he told me, he said, just sit and just tell me your whole story. And when I did, I can remember sitting next to him. And he was very, 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 very quiet. It was almost like he was going to sleep. You know, he was meditating, is what he said, because he kept his eyes closed. And I can remember talking to him, getting rid of all that garbage. I mean, things that I had done. And I can remember things happening between me and that man. I can't describe it. You know, but it wasn't really a fifth step because I didn't know the exact nature of the wrongs I had done in each one of those cases. But he just wanted me to get rid of the garbage. And I'll love him every day for the rest of my life for that very same reason, because he helped me to get that crap out that I know the disease feeds off of. Now, later in the fifth step, I'm able to learn those things about me that caused me to behave the way I did and what caused me to do the things that I did. What triggered those things? I'm able to see the exact natures of those wrongs. But you know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a prayer for fear. We ask God to remove our fear, and at once He'll remove it. And we ask Him resolutely where we can put our mind into working with others. And there's a prayer on resentments. You know, if we pray for that person who is sick, that has harmed us, you know, that they're sick people. And there's a prayer for sex. You know, one of the things that helped me out so much was being active in service. You know, going to jails every week, 2 and 3 days a week, you know, with my sponsor, it got me out of me. You know, and it's just what it says in the Bible. If I have a problem with sex, that resolutely will help me. You know, help me get out of those thoughts, that train of thought. But sexual behavior is not bad if it's used properly. You know, and one of the things I don't do today is I don't do anything to hurt anybody. Because all my life, especially when I was drinking, I was hurting people, hurting me. And if I'm hurting me, I'm hurting you. And today, I don't want to hurt anybody anymore. You know, so now we move on to step 5. And I got a half an hour to talk about step 5. Well, there's something in the book. You know, I don't want to quote. I don't want to stand up here and give anybody impressions that I know it all, because I really don't. But there's some things that my sponsor pointed out to me in this step that really was, I mean, just the thing that would not make me hesitate on this step. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. And that's all he had to show me. And I was ready to say, let's go. You know, I just didn't want to go back to that hell anymore. I mean, I had a clear vision of where I was. For some reason or another, I kind of cleared up relatively fast in AA. And, you know, through a great sponsor and who helped me. I also want to tell you, now going back to the third step, I just want to just go back to the third step just for a second. My sponsor had a short form of the third step. Get out of the way and stay out of the way. Don't get out of the way and get back in the way. Get out and stay out. You know? And that was his short version of the third step. And he used to tell me that all the time, especially when I start bothering my family. You know, I start telling my son what to do. My wife is not getting any better, Sonny. And he would say, I've talked to your wife. I know your wife very, very well. You're going to AA to be like your wife. You know, so my sponsor knew how to humble me quickly. You know what I mean? And there's another part here that got my attention. It says, time after time, newcomers have tried to keep themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having preserved the rest of the program, they wonder why they fell. We think the reason is they never completed their house cleaning. That's all, and he said, until they told somebody else their whole life story. Now, in that fifth step with my sponsor, when I was discussing those things on my fourth step, those things were things that I thought about that were affecting me that day. But going over the list, these were things that had affected me my entire lifetime. So, in effect, I was telling him my whole life story about each situation. And you know what's so remarkable is that I never realized, you know, just think about it. You know, been to school, been out drinking, wind up in a living hell, but I never, ever, ever, ever was ever told to take a look at me. Never was told that. Never. I've been told, you know better. You should know better. You were raised better. All kind of things, you know, but nobody ever told me to take a look at me until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and an inventory at that. And so sharing with Sonny, you know, I went and told her those things that, You know, those things that I probably would have never shared with anybody else in my life. And a lot of guys I sponsor know some of the things, you know, that I share with them. But my sponsor, I trusted. You know, it says that we could pick a priest, a rabbi, anybody from a religious order. I would never tell my wife, you know. I would never tell my mother, you know. I wouldn't, it's not, my intent would be not to hurt them. My intent is not to hurt anybody or to make anybody uncomfortable. You know, my sponsor has a strong neck, you know, and I believe he could take anything. And he said, you just tell me. One thing that fascinates me a lot about that is that what I found is that I didn't realize I was so self-seeking. You know, using people to better myself. You know, and I can relate that to my drinking, because I would go into the bar and I would act like I'm running for mayor or something. You know, I'd give people drinks and give this one, you know, and I used to think I was a nice guy. But what I really found out is I was doing that so that later when I'd have it, they could return the favor to me. Everything that I ever did was based on what you can do back for me. You know, grandiose behavior was a big one. You know, I used to be grandiose. I say, well, you can give me the credit because look how much money I make. Grandiose behavior. Stuck on myself, man. Unbelievable. And like I said, the frightening thing is, I didn't think there was anything wrong with me. And I came here and I found out, man, I'm so absorbed with me that I need God to remove this from me. I need God to, I need to align myself so that I can get to God's will, so I can get rid of this self, because this self is dangerous. You know, dangerous. Very, very dangerous. And self-centered to the extreme. You know, and but there's a solution. There is a solution. You know, I don't want to get into the next step, but in step six we talk about being entirely ready to have God remove those defects that I found. You know, I don't want to be bad no more. You know, at one time I thought that was a good thing. You know, that was a good survival thing. It was all right to be, to have a tremendous ego and to be domineering, to be an intimidator. No, I put the alcohol down. I don't want to be like that anymore. I don't be like, so we admit to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects or our wrongs. You know, God already knows. He knew. He knew me better than he knows me better than I know myself. But admit it to myself by putting it down on paper, by seeing it, by seeing the root cause of my problem, that the root cause of my problem, all my problem, is fear. Not getting what I want, when I want it, and how I want it. And my negative reaction to that. And so I sat down with Sonny. And I was able to talk to him. I told him what I found. And I shared those things, boy, that I would have never told nobody. Nobody. And I felt better. I felt a lot better. You know, it says we would get near to our Creator. You know, and I don't know how near I was, but I felt a lot better about myself. You know, I don't have to look over my shoulder anymore. You know, I don't have to, you know, I don't have that churning inside of those things that were just grips of me, that just really ran my life. I mean, in effect, they ran my life. They ran my life, you know, and, you know, I don't have that today. You know, and afterwards it tells us we should go and sit down for about an hour and meditate. And I don't know whether it was an hour or it was a half an hour, but I did go and I just sit down and I thought about it. And I said, gee whiz, I don't have nothing else. I don't have anything else. It's all gone. It says we take this book out and we look through the first five proposals. First five steps of the big book. And we thank God. We thank God for the courage that I'm able to do that. Nothing wrong with these steps. You know, in the 12 and 12 it talks about the boogeyman, or I think it's in the big book, I don't know. The 12 and 12 talks about the boogeyman. There's no boogeyman affected. I thank God for the fact, like I said, that I heard it so much. I heard it so much that I wanted to get better. So, with my sponsor, it was, what I do next, honey? Where am I at now? Can I go on to this one? You know, that's the way it was for me. And to this day, I don't regret one minute of it. Not one minute of it. You know, so about 40 minutes is about all I'm going to be able to do tonight on the on steps 3, 4, and 5. You know, so if anybody has any questions, you know, maybe I can help you out. I don't know. If I don't have the answer, I know where to go get it. Right here, you know. And if not, I just want to thank you and allow me for being here, sharing my little experience, strength, and hope on these steps. And God willing, if I live till next week, I hope to come back and share that again with you then. God bless you.